Hello, and thank you for joining me for episode 155 of Get Out of Rap. Today, I'm joined by Tim Farrell, the Business Transformation Manager at Directline. Hope you enjoy it. Well, I'm really pleased to say I'm joined by Tim Farrell, the Business Transformation Manager at Directline. And for me, this is a little bit of recompense because I first met Tim at the Disrupt event. And Tim was bravely going to come on stage despite having awful throat problems. And I also had a bit of a problem with my throat, so I thought I'd help by giving him a Strepsil. But that actually finished Tim's voice off and he wasn't able to enter the stage, and it was all down to me. So, Tim, I want to apologize again, but I also, more importantly, want to welcome you to Get Out of Rap.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here, Martin. And my voice, as you can hear, is wonderful.
And I promise I won't ever try and administer first aid to anyone again just before an event. Now, one of the things that we could talk about, some of the stuff that you were going to say on stage, because it was really interesting, but you've been involved in so much cool stuff going on right now, and we'll get to that. But just in terms of your career to date, where did this journey start for you?
So I started off work just under 20 years ago, working for what is now Virgin Media on the phones in the call center. Spent a couple of years there at NTL, and then I moved on to Three, the mobile network, again, working in the contact center. But that's where my career really developed. So over the space of 10 years, I went from dealing with first-line customers to handling high-level complaints, to then moving into a more analyst type of role, analyzing the data and actually learning how organizations like Three and big organizations worked. From there, I was offered an opportunity to move to Sabio, and Sabio is a system integrator, a customer experience company, and I worked with Sabio's digital clients to improve their digital footprint and optimize their customers' experiences digitally. Sabio spent a good 5 or 6 years there, focusing mainly on the insurance sector, worked with a variety of insurers, and then towards the end of my time at Sabio, an opportunity came up to move into the insurance sector with Directline themselves, and that's where I am today at Directline. I own the virtual assistant, chatbot, digital automation strategies.
Wow. What a lovely potted history. Probably the best answer for someone giving a career answer ever, I think. It's great to hear that where you are now actually started on the phones, and then that is exactly the sort of thing that I think we need to be talking about more to people about what can happen when you join our industry. Because that initial period on the phones, were you clear about what you wanted to do, or did it just sort of evolve?
Really, it evolved. I think on the phones, there's this concept where all the work is given to you, allocated to you. So if you're a phone handler, then obviously the phone calls, they just come one after the other. And then moving into more back office type contact center environments, such as complaint handling and so on, it's the same concept. The work comes to you, people allocate it and so on. And to be honest, it's quite an easy life, but it's not really fulfilling. So towards the start, it was kind of going to work, have a good time, go out after work with some of my colleagues, and then come in the next day, that sort of thing. But then as you get older, you see people moving upwards. So quite a lot of the people I worked with, they would move into team leader roles. And people management at that stage was never something that really interested me. And there was very little career path for those who wanted to move into more senior roles, but not people management roles. So at the time, it really kind of developed a bit not planned, if you know what I mean. So
yeah.
At Three, there was an opportunity to do some additional work. So analysis, because in a complaints department, you'd have complaints going to the directors, complaints going to regulatory bodies and so on. So all these different stakeholders wanted slides and explanations of what was going on. So I was asked to get involved. I knew a bit about Excel, PowerPoint, and produce these different reports. And then over time, I made myself so valuable that they said, we're going to give you a permanent analyst role. And that's when it first came to me, this is quite interesting. There's maybe then mileage in actually progressing my career and having objectives and goals other than meet your targets. I think that kind of shift from contact center agents or human in the contact center to a first responsible role is quite a difficult shift to make, because you're going from somewhere where you don't really know what that part of the business looks like into a very different world.
Mm. Do you know what? I think it's a really nice distinction to make around, you start to go, you know what, I'm good in something, but I can, the more well-trodden path is people management and then senior, and then you keep going up that kind of path, like the one that I trod. But actually, when you've got people who are adding so much value and want to progress, I think maybe we need to do a bit more signposting to the path that you trod around. There is another way, right? And that kind of search out other things, make yourself indispensable, seek out new projects, and you can have a really fulfilling career. And it doesn't necessarily have to be one that means you go agent, team leader, manager, and so on and so on. And you followed that, right?
Yeah. And all the things that I know now. So if you go in that agent to team leader to op manager type role, it's very much about stats and coaching and people management. And, you know, don't get me wrong, coaching is a very valuable task. And I do coaching myself as well. But the things that you do in that different path, which isn't the traditional people management side, is things like cases, presenting to audiences, preparing a compelling narrative to tell your story. And those sorts of things, you don't get that in the contact center. And your development in the contact center, and, you know, I'm going back 10, 15, 20 years now, your development is very much, let's do some soft skills, let's learn about what's the difference between features and benefits, and all very important, but it doesn't skill you in those business life skills that I think are really critical if you want to evolve.
For people listening that might want to follow you and your footsteps, that the concept then of taking data and analysis and stats, but turning it, as you say, wrapping a compelling narrative and starting to storytell and help people that way, how can people start to explore that?
I think the world is very different now. So these days, 2023, you've got things like LinkedIn Learning, you've got the internal company learning, where you can learn about data. You might even have data tribes and data teams who will do coaching and side by side, or even company wide presentations. So all these different resources, you can use them, but teaching the theory is very different than teaching the practicalities of it. So what really worked for me was when I went in and did my Excel and data type training, was I went in with several use cases which were actually important to me. So some of those were business-based. This is what I want to do in business. But then, you know, running a household, you've got finances, you've got plans for the next car or whatever that looked like. So you've got your own use cases that you might have a basic spreadsheet which tracks your budget, but you don't know how to do this and then model what your savings might be over several years. So going in with those use cases, rather than just learning this is the theory, you'll get a lot more out of those types of sessions.
I love that. That's brilliant. And then if we come that kind of move into Sabio, so less customer facing, but working with clients and really getting into the integration and the digital element, you've really helped you now. What was that experience like, kind of moving away from customer facing and going, right, I'm now at Sabio and I'm doing something completely different?
It was a very different world. So let's talk digital first of all. I've always been quite a digital techie type person, going back to when I was in my teenage years, and even before that, right? So back in the days with Commodore and the Sinclair computers, I was the one who got the magazines and made the little games that you then saved onto a tape deck, right? So I've always been into the technology and digital aspect, but it's quite different, because you then you go to the client, right? And you've got this wonderful idea, and do you know what? They are wonderful ideas, but in that vendor-client relationship, everything costs money, everything takes time. And on the client side, you've got your own client goals, and those client goals might not necessarily always align with, we want to do something that's technically cool. So in a way, these clients spending, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of pounds on wonderful technologies, they were actually easier to deal with than the companies paying £30 a month for a phone contract, for example. You know, you're on first name terms, you speak to the same people day in, day out. But actually getting over that mindset that we don't have to do something technically cool because it doesn't meet the goals of the business, it was quite interesting. But then once I cracked that, the conversations with the clients became a lot more easier to do. So when you start aligning yourself to the client's goal, you can go into your next optimization meeting and saying, right, well, we've understood your goals, and this is what we've seen, and this is what we recommend you do about it. And they become a lot more easier to get sign-offs when you know that sort of stuff.
And I get the impression, just from listening to you talk, and you did take me back then, the Commodore 64. I think I was a Spectrum 48K kid with the old rubber keypads and just watching games load up with that noise in the screen. I must admit, I didn't have the attention span to write some of them. We had a ZX81, if you remember that.
Oh, yeah.
Just writing some of the 10... go to 20, tightness skill, 30 run.
Yeah.
But I get the impression from talking to you that this kind of, the world that you're in and this constant, it's a very growth mindset outlook that you're always, always progressing. And that has to be done in conjunction with whether it's your customers or your clients. But that... Has that evolved in your mind from, do you ever feel like, oh, I'm behind the curve, or do you actually go, do you know what, this is so exciting, just keeping up with where the technology can take us?
Yeah. So I think there are a couple of thoughts there. So am I behind the curve? It's quite interesting. 10, 15 years ago, they would have put me firmly in the early adopter type bracket. Now I'm probably more early majority or towards the middle of that bell curve. And so that's quite interesting. But some of that comes with, you're a bit younger, you don't have family commitments, you can spend a bit more money to get involved in those sorts of things. But in terms of reading and understanding about the technology, you know, I know about the things that are coming. You've got VR headsets. I don't yet see the use case for me for those. You've got electric cars, you've got cars that are going to drive themselves. In my world, you've got things like ChatGPT, OpenAI, prompt-driven image generators, and all that good stuff. And whether or not we as a company use these today or tomorrow or the day after, we can't afford to just ignore what was happening. Let's take that Commodore example as a great example here. So if I'd stayed 20 years ago and developed my Commodore skills, then I wouldn't have skills that's relevant today. Now, if today I focus on the technical skills and the ability and the knowledge that I have, in 5 or 10 years' time, then you'll get these youngsters who have absorbed a lot more and much more relevant things taking over my job, that sort of thing. So it's very important, whether you adopt the technologies or whether you don't adopt the technologies, it's important to understand the technological change that's happening and then be able to make informed decisions, because you might well decide that prompt-driven image generation is not for us. But as long as we understand what are the benefits, what are the drawbacks, and we make an informed decision, that's okay. We might get that right, we might get that decision wrong, but it's about being able to make an informed decision rather than just ignoring it as if it's not there.
Because after the understanding, you're better able to decide upon the potential application of the technology, right? Because I think that's key, isn't it? It's like, how is this going to make our life better? Is this going to make our customers' lives better? And then that lends itself to thinking about innovation. And I think when I've got to know you, that word keeps coming up about innovation, innovation. And is that, so if you think about where you are now at Direct Line Group and some of the stuff that you've done, how, you know, at the forefront of your mind, it seems to me, is innovation. What are some of the cool things that you've been doing?
So we have a wonderful virtual assistant / chatbot that's on our website. It gives us wonderful results. It gives a decent customer experience to our users. And I think in terms of chatbots and where different companies have done things, we've had ours in place for about 5 years now. So we're a bit ahead of the curve there, but we're now at the stage where we've been thinking, well, what's the next steps for it? So we've done things like integrating it into our Policy Center databases, for example. So a customer who's authenticated, we can give them personalized answers. A lot of chatbots can't even do that today, but we are at that stage where we're looking at, well, what's next? So what do we think might be next? Opening up different channels. So if we take some of our important letters that go out to customers, I've had one recently, it's time for your renewal. Give us a call. Here's our number, right? And it's that mindset, well, let's give them a phone number. But in the reality, if we could give them, for example, a QR code to scan that takes them onto WhatsApp or takes them onto Apple Business Chat or the Google equivalent, and then they're interacting with a bot that knows they've had this letter, this is what might come next. We have these details about the customer, so we know the renewal price, we know what the letter's been about. We can give them a response in a channel of their choice. They don't have to go to a website. They don't have to go to a website on their phone, which is arguably a worse experience. They can open up their favorite messaging channel, have a chat with our bot, and get a response and complete what they want to do without having to make a phone call, going through an IVR system, speaking to a human, and really taking time out of their day.
Well, I can't help but feel like I am a customer, right? And that concept of, you know what it's like, even today, I've had a message, don't forget to do X, Y, and Z about this and the other. And you kind of go, right, I've got to allocate a sizable chunk of time now because I know I'm going to ring, I'm going to give all my details, maybe twice, and then I'm going to finally get through to someone and action it. The process you've just explained, I would like for everything, please.
Yeah. And those sorts of things, they're easier to do than phone as well. So I remember a time, if you remember, I don't know, maybe a year or 2 years ago, and the gas prices were changing, and they were changing quite significantly, and everybody was trying to update their meter readings on that one day before the price change. And I won't name the company, but the gas providers, I think all the gas providers' websites crashed because everybody was trying to do the meter readings. So I ended up, I was working, right? I was doing some work. And then on my second screen, I had chat window open. Now, I was in a queue of about 200 people to get through to a chat agent, but I could actually do my work and then on my second screen, wait for that chat to connect rather than being tied up with a phone call, potentially with my hand to my ear, better with a Bluetooth headset, but still with a more thought-intensive process than just waiting for a chat agent to appear. And those digital channels for us, they make customers' lives easy. And it's never about taking away the phone option. There are journeys that suit themselves more to phone. There are customers who want to make a phone call, and we can talk about how we deal with those later, but it's about giving customers options that they didn't realize were possible, because everybody thinks, right, well, we've always phoned these companies, so we're always going to continue to phone these companies. And if you never tell them that there's a better way or a different way, they will never make that choice, try a different way.
That's fascinating. And something you said earlier as well piqued my interest around the varying levels of chatbots or virtual assistants, that some are quite, are they a bit more linear, kind of like yes, no, whereas what it sounds like you're talking about that you have, they're more personalized and intuitive.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, look, let's be honest, there's going to be people listening today who are going to think to themselves, well, I've used Barrow Live's chatbot and it's not very good. The truth is, it is pretty good, but it's not a human. And we have to realize that. And with a chatbot, one of the main things, we want to resolve every customer's question in the chatbot. We want to help the customer achieve what they want to do in the chatbot and online. But the real trick is to fail fast. So if you realize in the chatbot that the conversation isn't going to plan, or the customer is struggling or needs help, then you know what? Let's get into a human, right? Because if they can't get it resolved in the chatbot, they're not going to go away and do nothing. They're going to go away and find a phone number. So in the chatbot, what we do today is we try and understand where the customer is struggling, where the customer is going to fail in their task. And at that stage, we'll either escalate them out to a WhatsApp person or to a live chat person on the web. And what we're seeing is that a significant majority of people, they're actually choosing to go to WhatsApp. So we say, well, here's a link to start a web messaging conversation, which is like live chat. But if you're out and about, or you don't want to wait by your computer for a reply, just scan the QR code, right? And what we're seeing is we're seeing a much bigger proportion of people actually choosing to scan the QR code, interact with us by WhatsApp rather than use live chat. So it's about, so to your point, Martin, it's about failing fast, recognizing the limitations of the technology and getting the customer to a human. And the reason we do that is because a chatbot is about providing a good customer experience. It's not a human, but just because it's not a human doesn't mean that you can put the customer through various different loops, refuse to get them to a person and give a negative experience. You have to give a good experience, because if you don't, the customer won't use it next time.
That's fascinating. How long have you had WhatsApp functionality? And you had said there that has the customer take up of that surprised you or been in line with what you've kind of forecast?
It surprised some people. It's not surprised me, because I think there's two thoughts here. Everybody thinks web chat is the standard fallback option. People are happy to wait by the computer. But the reality is that people are doing everything by WhatsApp or messaging channels these days, right? It might be a group of parents at the school. It might be your five-a-side football team. It might just be a group of friends where you share funny photos. And it's that application on your phone, and that phone you've got with you, you know, pretty much 24 hours a day, that you can then interact. You don't have to do anything special. Go to a computer, go to a web browser. You just wait for the ping to come in and then action it. And it's really easy. So for me, it wasn't a surprise, but I think there were a few shocked faces when they realized the take-up of WhatsApp versus the live chat facility.
And with WhatsApp, do you have, so it's a chatbot, but also then do you still have the potential escalation to agents interacting through WhatsApp?
We don't have the chatbot in WhatsApp today. That's something we want to do this year. So right now we've got the chatbot on the web, and that escalates out to a human in WhatsApp. But tomorrow or later in the year, the idea will be to have the chatbot functionality behind WhatsApp, and then some very intelligent business rules, right? So because if the customer is in a particular state of their policy, you don't want to make them go to a chatbot when you know already that the chatbot can't help them. And if the customer needs a human, we get them to a human. So tomorrow you'll have the virtual assistant and the chatbots in WhatsApp, Apple Business Messaging, various different messaging channels with some very intelligent routing rules, data-driven, to get them to a human or to the robots.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And the extent to which you must have to do, and I love the concept of failing fast, because I guess you have your blueprint of the journeys that your customers are going on, where and how you can give them exactly what they're looking for. And to one of your very early points, that kind of the data that allows you to storytell around it and go, right, here's the areas where we need to, this isn't working. So what can we do instead? And how much of that is kind of you're getting all of that information through all of your business intelligence, right?
Yeah, but we also get it from the chatbot technology itself. So it's not like a phone call or an interaction with a human where you need to have quality coaches listening to every interaction. It's a technology. It's a computer, right? And if we go out, there are some of our conversation flows where we need to ask follow-up questions to give you the right answer, right? So if you've got a follow-up question and you're seeing, well, actually, for that follow-up question, 50% of people gave an unexpected response, then the computer can tell you that instantly, right? It says, you know, you've got these customers entering the top of the funnel, and then, you know, a smaller proportion asked one of our key questions, and then a different proportion got stuck at this particular step. So it lets us identify the steps where it's failing. And then we've got a great content manager. What he and his team of people do is they go in, look at that. They look at the wording, they look at the experience, they solicit user experience research and feedback, and then ultimately improve the experience. And they can test things pretty quickly. And the approach has worked really well for us, Martin. You know, there's been times where we spent an hour looking at things, making a really, really quick change. And, you know, the impact has been massive, you know, and you can do that. It's not a quality coach who listens to 5-10 calls a week or a day, for example. It's a computer that tells you, these are the stats and these are the key drop-off points.
This is fascinating stuff. Can you just explain then, you said it's a content management team, and their role is to analyze what the system is telling you in terms of, here's what customers are entering, this is kind of what we expected, here's some unexpected responses, let's analyze them, and maybe based on them, we need to look at that journey. Is that right?
Yeah. So in terms of structure, so I look after strategic vision, projects in the VA, and all the high level and long term aspects of the technology and the solution. Where do we want to go? Where do we want to go the year after? That sort of thing. The content manager, he works side by side with me, and he looks after the day-to-day operation and optimization of the solution. So any new content or any changes or any product updates that need to go into the virtual assistant, he manages. The optimization, he looks after. Now, he works closely with a team of subject matter experts across the contact center. So these are people who are performing well in their contact center roles. And what he does is he works with them and he's like, but we want to say this to the customer. How would you say that to a customer on web chat or on the phone? So he gets that kind of frontline knowledge. But it's a two-way operation. So we get that from them. We get their time and we get their resource and their experience, of course. And what they get from us is we expose them to those things like, this is what a project looks like. This is how we work with stakeholders. This is how we put together a business case or a presentation and so on. Because like I said at the top of the call, Martin, you've got that situation where these are people who are dealing with web chats or phone calls, right? And they're really good at doing that, but they've not had that experience. So this is how the business operates. So what Salo, our contact manager, does is he brings them in and, you know, everything that they give to him is really, really valuable and important. But I like to think that what we give back in terms of their experience sets them up for their future career and their next step in the progression.
Yeah, I love that. That's brilliant, because you can imagine people getting really, that's really interesting stuff, because you're talking about new technology, automation, but also utilizing the skills that they've gained through thousands of customer interactions and understanding how customers think and what they want and when they want it. Do you find then kind of your, when you're thinking about your strategic goals or where this can go, that you have some real aspirational goals and that you're like, right, how do we get there? What are some of those things that you're thinking about?
Yeah, so let's touch on GPT, right? Everybody's talking about GPT. Yeah. Everybody's got a plan for GPT, right? So let's talk about that first of all. So GPT makes me a little bit nervous because, right, we're an insurance company. Everything we tell customer has to be accurate, because if it's not accurate, right, your customer could end up stopped at the side of the road, getting a conviction for driving without insurance. So that aspect of your GPT and its ability to confidently give wrong answers to people is really quite worrying. So there is an aspect of where can these generative AI solutions help us? And where we're thinking with that is things like wordsmithing, right? So, you know, we do use copywriters. They provide a valuable role. But can we use that technology to say, this is what we want to say? And then the technology gives us a response back that says it in a nice way. Can we use it to help agents, right? So in a contact center, right, everybody thinks about the virtual assistant and chatbots as being something that helps customers, right? Helps real people on who are coming to the website. But can we help agents, right? So you've got the concept of the super agent, right? So the agent has been here 10 years and knows everything, but maybe they missed a team briefing last week. So they've missed an important announcement. You've got the concept of the team leader, right? Let's send a Teams message to the team leader to say, what's the answer here, right? You've got your knowledge bases, which are, some of them are good, some of them are not so good, right? So if you've got the knowledge base with all the product information and the policy information and everything that an agent would need to use to make a decision, can you feed that into a generative AI solution so that when a chat or a phone call comes in, we feed that solution. This is what we know about the customer. This is the situation. This is where they are. What's the process to follow? And then what the AI solution can do is say, this is what the next steps are. This is the process and the policy behind those next steps. If you're looking for some things to say to the customer, here are some options, right? So we see it, well, not first and foremost, but there's very much a tool there to make the agent's job a lot easier. Right? You free up the team leaders, you free up those super agents, and you give those agents instant information that's going to help the customer that they're dealing with right now. So you've got that. From a customer side, I think there's also an opportunity to deal with what we call the long tail of queries. So we focus on our top customer journeys, our top customer questions, and we do have a lot of questions and intents in our solution today. But there are some, maybe you get one question a month or one question every 2 or 3 months, and yet we have the answer somewhere on the website. Can we employ the technology to go and read and interpret our website and then for the journeys and the flows we've not built, pick up some of the slack there? So there's lots of different things we're thinking about with GPT, generative AI. But as I say, there's a bit of nervousness just because we can't give incorrect information.
It's interesting. I think we could have a really long chat around. If you think about, it's definitely disruptive, isn't it? Because even from an educational point of view, it's made the people in the education world have to look at, right, are our students just going to go to ChatGPT and just blindly follow whatever the response is? How do we make sure that they're not just shortcutting understanding and learning, and they're just parrot fashion. Here you go. Here's what it's told me. But in your world, as you said, there's real life consequences of not being careful around the use of this sort of technology. Mm-hmm. It's a fascinating time to be alive.
Yeah. And to that point, Martin, there's something quite interesting there. So last year when we went to do our performance reviews, a colleague and myself, we both went to the OpenAI solution and we told the GPT engine, these are the achievements we've done this year, right? And then we fed that all in. And at the end, I was like, give me 5 paragraphs that I can use in my annual review to say how good I was, right? My colleague did the same. Now, there's one key difference. I read it. I updated the spelling from American to English. I made it sound a bit more like myself. He didn't. He just stuck it in, right? And our manager knows that we both did this, but he clocked my colleagues. He's like, hang on, why are you using Zeds? And one of the things he came up with is, Tim has been an excellent virtual assistant, full stop, right? It's that example, right? You know, I think humans and machines for now will have to work with each other to get the right solution. You can't just let the machines go off and do their own thing.
Yeah.
And that's a wonderful example where, well, I've read mine, I've made sure it actually makes sense, and somebody else didn't. And, you know, it was all fine, but it was instantly spotted. And customers will do that, agents will do that, and people will do that.
And I imagine, though, the applications, you said something earlier around kind of some of the content and some of the applications that exist that help you make content more readable, let's say, to allow for better understanding.
Yes.
Must have some applications when you think some of your subject matter naturally is going to be quite dense in terms of there's a lot to understand. There's probably some applications, there's applications there, but how do you ensure that you still have access to experts that can help you interpret it, right?
Yeah, because we've actually been having that conversation about the simplification and so on for some time now, because some of our policy wording is very much, our policy wording is the policy wording. It's been written by very, very clever people to make sure that we cover what we say we do and we don't cover what we say we won't cover, and so on. And if you employ a technology to read that and say, make it simpler, does it detract from the meaning, right? Does it change the meaning? I know in some legal contracts, right, you'll get legal contracts which have English versions and French versions, but the idea is that the main language is the one that counts in a court of law. So from our point of view, simplification, can we use a technology to help us? Yes. Would we let that technology loose without human oversight? Probably not.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very true. And I think it's that kind of weaving everything together with to achieve one overarching goal, which is, and you mentioned something earlier that I thought was really interesting around, naturally, we're all focused on customers, customer journey, customer experience. But you said also around if we're able to also use this for our team members. And how does this help our team members? Because I think that's really interesting what you're doing as well.
Yeah. And I think it ties into something you said at the Sabio Disrupt event last month. So I think you and Stephen from CCMA, you were talking about the job of the contact center agent becoming more difficult because technologies like chatbots, virtual assistants, they're taking away all the easy conversations. And what's left is the more complex scenarios. So if we can employ this technology in an agent-facing setting, so like the example I gave before, we feed in all the information and the technology comes up by their side and says, this is what's next, this is what you need to do, here's some things that you can use to help that customer, then actually that agent's handling time and complexity of dealing with that conversation may go down because we're taking away screens. We're taking away screens that we don't need to use. You've got contextual information. They're not going off to search for something. They're not going off to remember, you know, what's the right search term to get that process? I can't quite remember it. Well, if we can employ that technology to give them the relevant information at the relevant time, then surely it has to help them dealing with those complex queries that are coming through.
Definitely. And that was, it's a fascinating area when you think one of the side effects of technology picking up transactional customer interactions means that, and you know, you and me have both been agents, and I definitely can relate to taking a cognitive break and having an easier conversation with someone that just wanted to change their address versus someone that's got they go, right, I've been dealing with this query for 3 months, and you think, right, I'm really going to have to engage my brain here. This is going to hurt.
Yeah.
And what we were saying at the Disrupt event was that the removal of them means that agents are just having this cognitive load continually. But what you're saying, I really like, is that if we can support them, it makes those more complex ones easier to divulge and converse about because you're not doing a lot of the fetching and gathering, right?
Yeah, exactly that. And one other thing that we're looking at to remove the fetching and gathering as well is getting the agents to outsource some of the repetitive tasks to a bot. Mm-hmm. And so ideally everybody's going to change their address or update their vehicle online using self-service functionality. But if we get somebody who comes through to a human and a web chat environment, then what the web chat agent will be able to do is to hook the person, the customer, up with a bot and collect the information from them, right? Because these are standard questions. It's standard question sets to gather the quote information. So the analogy we like to use internally is the example of Tesco self-service checkouts, right? You've got one or two supervisors looking after the checkouts. You've got 10 or 20 actual self-service checkouts. And those two supervisors, they monitor what's going on. If you get stuck, if you need ID, or if the wait's not quite right, they'll come over and help you. But you've got these two people looking after 20 different customers at one time, doing something which they can do themselves with a bot, so to speak. And then, but they're still monitoring, they're still actively engaged, and they can drop in as and when it's required. So it's about getting rid of those repetitive things. And it's quite interesting because we're talking about cognitive load and complexity. And actually we're talking about sending some of these easy repetitive tasks out. But repetitive tasks, surely if we can get rid of those for the agents, it makes them a bit happier.
You are listening to Get Out of Rap.
Everyone, I know I am. Everyone is going to be stealing that analogy. That is brilliant. It's brilliant though, because it perfectly, in a real world thing that we all deal with, sums up where we are right now, or maybe even where we should be. That kind of, you want that, you know, if you think about customer choice, if you're in a supermarket, I know personally, I'm going self-serve every time.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
That's a great analogy. I absolutely. Now then, what about voice? Where's voice in all of this?
Yeah, voice is interesting. So at the Sabio Disrupt conference last month, I think it was Stu Dorman or somebody stood up on stage and said, voice is a digital channel. I don't agree with that. Voice isn't a digital channel. However, what you need to do in an organization is think to yourself, voice is a channel that can be automated or improved using the same type of technology we use in digital channels. So I get the point that Stu was trying to make. I agree with it, but it's not a digital channel, but it's a very important channel for us because we do a lot of web interactions each month. We do a lot more telephone conversations each month. People have got our number on all their documents, our number's on Google, and people will get letters with the phone number on. So what can we do with telephony? So today we've got open call steering in place. So it says, what's your query about? And it will get them through to the right team. What we've deployed on top of that is ID and V capture. So we capture details that allow us to identify and verify a customer in the channel. And those two aspects, if you think about what they're going to do, they're going to reduce your transfers, right? And they're going to reduce your average handling time. So you present the call to the agent. It's probably going to be the right agent in the right team. And by doing your verification, you're shaving off however many seconds it took to verify the customer. So multiply that by your number of calls, that's a big saving, right? So that's what we're doing in telephony today. But where can we go with telephony tomorrow? A lot of companies are saying, well, just put a message in the IVR, send them to the website or send them a text message or a WhatsApp and engage with them digitally. But if you do that, and they've got a question that you can't handle digitally, you've frustrated the customer. They've made a phone call, you've sent them a message, which is purported to be helpful, and they come back into telephony enraged because they couldn't do it online. So it's about being smart. There's two thoughts about being smart here. Understand what the customer is trying to achieve, and then understand who is the customer and can we help them? So I'm going to give you a real example from when I phoned Sky a long time ago. I phoned up Sky because I'd lost the back of the remote control where the batteries go. So I phoned up thinking I'm going to have to speak to somebody. Their natural language IVR understood I was calling about a replacement remote control. And it said to me, I'm going to send you a link to the online form, and the online form will let you apply for the replacement remote control. It was free of charge, which is quite nice. But it was quite a nice process because it wasn't just an indiscriminate go to the website. It was a let's understand what the question is about and then send you to the relevant form. Mm. So that's one consideration. In our world, there's, you know, there's elements where we won't let you do things online. Maybe there's, you know, we need to validate some details, or maybe you've got an open claim. So if we can understand who the customer is, then we can get into an agent should they need to. But the end goal is to be able to do transactions in the IVR. If you think about one of the things that happens on the 25th of December each year is everybody comes to our chatbot and says, guess what? Got a private reg, Christmas. So those customers who come online, they're lucky because they can do it online. If you make a phone call, then you probably have to wait until Boxing Day to stick it on your car. So, you know, and why should that be the case? Why should those be reliant on a human? We have the technology to do that in a self-service manner, right? Because it's online. So if you can put that in your messaging channels, if you can put that in your web channels, if you can put that in your voice channels, right? A customer who calls up and says, I've got a new reg or a new vehicle, they can do that on they can do that either in the IVR, or we can send them a link to the online journey, or even go to them in WhatsApp and say, right, you've made a phone call, you want to change your vehicle, let's get some details from you and get you a quote, right? And that's not just something that happens when we're closed or on Christmas Day. That's something we can do 24/7, 365 days a year. And it's those sorts of things that I think can be really useful to take away those things in the contact center. It will reduce wait times. It will improve, I say it will improve average handling time, but actually we're taking away some of the things that some of the easy queries. So your average handling time will be much more efficient because it's used in the more complex queries. And I think that's really exciting. We haven't really touched voice yet. It's something that's on our 2 to 3 year roadmap, but there are considerations and we need to think that through. One of the things I was thinking quite extensively about is claims automation. So in the insurance world, we have something called first notification of loss, or FNOL. And it's when you make a phone call to say something's happened, I've crashed, or whatever else. And from a technical point of view, it's data collection. It's a really easy process to automate. If the customer's by the side of the road, their car's in pieces, maybe there's casualties, or they're outside the house, which is burnt down, is there value in putting a human in front of them? Because that's when the customer needs it the most. Maybe there is. And that's when it becomes not just a what is a technically right thing to do versus what is the right thing to do for the customer in that situation. And that's something that companies like us and other companies will grapple with and think about over time. But those are the main considerations we think that exist for voice.
It's really fascinating because back in the day, I was on the phones dealing insurance, predominantly life insurance, but also buildings and contents. And as a young person who probably, I wasn't dealing with much of that, I don't think at the time, the level of emotion and, you know, how emotive some of the calls were, those first notifications of loss, right? That kind of are often very close to or actually in the heat of the moment.
Yeah.
And that it's interesting that you're talking about the consideration of actually we can make this seamless, quick and efficient, but it is an emotive call more so than some other industries. And I know other industries will say, well, actually people are just as passionate about their shoes and read, you know, a purchase as they are about life insurance. But what you're doing in the insurance world is there are some life-changing events there. You're there to be there when things go wrong. That level of emotion and your consideration of that, because you're kind of going, well, actually, it's really seamless if we just do this, but there's no human interaction there to offer empathy over and above written empathy.
Yeah.
So how do you, it's an interesting one to wrestle with, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing as well there is, insurance as a product, it's not something that people want to pay for, right? It's, you know, 50, 60 pound coming out of your bank account each month to the car, and then whatever your home insurance costs and all these different things, right? And it's not something you want to have to pay for. In the case of car, you have to pay for it. But really, in the case of most products, you have to pay for it to protect every investment you've got in your home and so on. And for a lot of customers, the only interaction they actually have with their insurance company is when something goes wrong and they have to make a claim. So, you can have, they've got, do they have a relationship with the insurer? I don't know if they have a relationship or whether it's more transactional than that. But when it goes wrong, that's the only time you'll actually hear from them. And it's important to get that interaction right.
And I just want to touch on the extent to which your personal previous relationship with Sabio, but now the kind of professional relationship you have with them, helps you going forward.
Yeah. So at Sabio, when we used to work when we work with Sabio, they provide us with excellent knowledge and experience to optimize a virtual assistant. So if you take me, for example, I looked after a range of insurance clients. So when something hit, for example, an airline going bust, right, or travel insurance and impacts on COVID 2 or 3 years ago, then what we were hearing from one insurer, we could then go out to the range of insurers and talk about, this is what's happening in the industry. You might want to do something about it. So I think from the Sabio point of view, there is that breadth of knowledge across the industry. They do work with a lot of insurers, and then actually not just the knowledge, but how they're applying that in the conversational AI space. That really helps companies like us, because we don't talk to other insurers. There's lots of rules and so on against it. So we're very much limited to what we read in the news and what's going on, without recognizing that actually company B over there has had an experience and they've made a change. So companies like Sabio, they're never going to tell us company B's made a change or company C's made a change. Yeah. They're going to tell us, this is what we're seeing in the industry. And that really helps us, because they can then tell us, this is how you can actually apply this knowledge to your day-to-day and make those changes. So there's that aspect as well. But I think over time as well, the relationship with Sabio has evolved. So when we took out the virtual assistant, put it on the website, I think nearly 5 years ago, then we knew we wanted a virtual assistant because we had a business case that said it would deliver X amount of benefit. Wonderful. We had not the first idea of how to go about it. So you bring in a lot of external professional services resource to help us to do that, right? And these are experts in the field, and they come out and they put the virtual assistant in, they teach us best practice. And then over 5 years, so a company like us, we want to improve our internal capability. So last year, they hired myself, an expert in the field, to come in and look after the strategy. We also brought in the content manager as an internal hire to manage the day-to-day running of the actual content and optimization of the solution. So the relationship with Sabio really shifted to one where they were doing everything for us, to one where they took more of a strategic and advisory role in the solution. And you know, it's not a bad thing, right?
The vendors,
they're going to want, lots of professional services projects. And I understand that. But companies like us, we will want to do more ourselves. So companies like Sabio adapting to that and continuing to remain relevant in the account, it's really good for them, and it's really good for us because it helps us too.
Well, I think what you've just perfectly, very eloquently described what a healthy partnership should look like, because you're evolving together. And I think this whole podcast is about kind of that progression, using technology the right way for customers, employees. And as you say, it's just a privilege to have you come on as an expert and talk about this. And I just think it's great that you started on the phones, because that, for people listening that have made that first jump, or they're yet to make that first jump, you're a great example of what's possible, because now you're in a position where you're shaping the future application of technology that's ever evolving. I think it's brilliant.
Yeah. And I think my key shout out there, Martin, would be that, you know, I tried college, I tried university. It didn't work for me. I wasn't ready for it at the time. And I think the, you know, the most important thing there, particularly now where the expectation is people go to university or further education, is that if it's not suitable for somebody, that can be okay. It might take you a bit longer than moving straight into a graduate type position. But if you're willing to apply yourself and learn and develop, then you can get to where people like I am.
Yeah. What a lovely, lovely place to finish this. I definitely would like you to come back on and talk some more about technology. But for today, Tim, thank you so much. It's been illuminating and a lovely kind of note to end for anyone listening that there are several different paths and you too could become a super expert like Tim.
Been a pleasure, Martin. Thank you.
Thanks very much, mate.
Thanks for listening to Get Out of Wrap. This episode is made possible by my friends at Sabio.